projections, the thoughts of what will come, of what's going to play out, how it's going to go. I think that if we are citizens in our nation, if we have any form of media, you've been hit with it. It's been there. Even if you don't have media, it's all the yard signs. It's all the things which are out there that we see, whether we agree or whether we disagree, for good and for bad. We hear a lot of stuff. We hear a lot of both those who are campaigning to be leaders in our nation, both in our local communities, in our own state, and in our nation. And we hear a lot of rhetoric. We hear a lot of words, things which are spoken, many of them by highly successful and highly educated people. But there's always opposing opinions. There's always opposing sides. Have you ever heard a discussion, or we'll say a debate, about a general topic that you really didn't have an opinion on before? And then you hear, well, that sounds all right. Well, that sounds good too. And it's like, well, what's the best decision? What's the best choice? How should I think about this? What should I believe about these opposing sides? You know, that's very formative for us, for who we are. And it's something that we always want to know that we're making the right decision. Anybody here want to make a bad decision? I mean, I've chosen to make bad decisions in my life, especially in my youth, going, oh, this is really bad, but I really want to. But as we age, hopefully we mature, and we decide we want to make good choices. We want to make the right choice. That's often something that we hear in an ad campaign. Vote for Bill Smith, the right choice. How do I know that? You know, really? I don't know. I can know what I've been told. I can think a certain way. I might agree with something that Bill Smith says, or I might not. So how do we know? We hear a lot of things being said. You know, if when I was growing up, we had three channels. You know, and that was it. And really just one, and the other two came in kind of sketchy. You know, you had to get out, have somebody hold the antenna or move things around so you could get the other channels. But nowadays, we have so much information being funneled to us. So much data, you know. And the interesting thing is depending on who's sharing that data with you, it's either good or it's bad. It could depend on what their thoughts are, what their agenda is. But they've got seemingly all the knowledge, all the understanding, and they want to tell us what we should believe and what we should think. Sometimes when we're inundated with that type of information, the knowledge, as it were, that is out there in the world, we can forget that there's a difference between what is good and what is godly. Because in the world, we may hear somebody say something, and we're like, well, you know, that sounds good. That sounds good to me. But is it godly? You know what? It does make sense that we should raise the debt ceiling. It's the only way that our nation's going to survive. But what does God say about debt? I know, and we don't live in the society that the children of Israel did, but there's a lot of questions. Well, do I vote for this? Do I vote for that? Do I like this? Do I not like that? There is a difference. And in spite of what the outcome of whatever the election is, hopefully we know who is actually in control. That God is in control. It's Him that we look to for our salvation. And it is only through Him that we can actually have godly knowledge and wisdom. without godly knowledge and wisdom, it's easy to get tossed to and fro, all the different words that we hear. But with it, we have the foundation. With it, it doesn't matter how many men come up and try to sway us one way or another. With godly wisdom, we need not be afraid. I know I still have a large group of people that are Facebook friends that I've known throughout my life. And it's interesting how many are celebrating the outcome of our election. And, yay, everything's going to get better. Or, it's the end of the world. Democracy is over. And, I mean, and it's vehement on both sides. So I would like to actually take a look in Daniel at the end of the world. If you would, turn with me to Daniel chapter 12. When Connie clears her throat, I always think I'm in trouble. Oh, it wasn't Connie. Okay, well, then I'm fine. Daniel 12 and verse 1. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1. Speaking again of the end of the world. At that time, Michael, the archangel, shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, a group of peoples, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book of life. Notice it doesn't say everyone who is a Republican or everyone who is a Democrat shall be saved. It doesn't say that at all. It says everyone who is found written in the book of life, of God's book of life. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Again, this is God's wisdom, not the wisdom of man. And it is God's righteousness, not man's. In verse 4, he says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end." He's saying, this needs to be sealed. They don't get to see this yet. They don't get to understand it. "And they shall run to and fro." I always think of, you know, the old saying, a chicken with their head cut off. Not to be too graphic, but I've seen that. And it's startling. You know, it's just frantic. It's just, you know, it's running around, except they can't talk anymore. But he's saying that's what it's going to be like at the end. You know, the sky is falling, or follow me, you know. It's going to be just that ridiculous. Does that feel a little familiar? In the last few months leading up to the election, which just happened? "So they shall run to and fro, back and forth." And it says, "And knowledge shall increase." But this knowledge isn't the knowledge of the Lord. You know, we look at all these different people, political pundits and economists and social advocates. How many of them are promoting godly knowledge? That word knowledge, as it's the definition is given from Strong's Concordance, is cunning. Cunning. It's often a word that is associated with the cunning of a wolf. There's intelligence there, but it's not for your good. It's cunning. It is ignorant, or to do something ignorantly, to be unawares. And yet it's called knowledge. So they shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. And that's over the whole world. It says in verse 5, then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank, and the other on that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters by the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever, then it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. And when the power of the holy people have been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Although I heard, I did not understand. And then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? So he's seeing it, but he's not understanding what it is that he's being shown. Now, this is, of course, is not unusual to humankind. We see lots of things. Many times Christ spoke, and those who followed him, even his disciples, didn't understand fully what it was he was saying. And so he asked again, my Lord, what shall be the end of these days or these things? Just like everyone hoping before the elections, well, what's going to happen now? What'll happen if the person that I vote for doesn't get it? Is it the end of the world? Is it the end of all things? Or is it now everything's going to be great? Woohoo! Everybody still wants to know what's going to happen. And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. I'm not going to tell you. You will have to wait and see. But this is guaranteed. Many shall be purified, made white, and refined. But the wicked shall do wickedly. Those who are evil in the world, they're not going to stop doing evil, whether they're in office or whether they're not in office. That's the way of human nature. And none of the wicked shall understand. Regardless of how intelligent they are, regardless of how many degrees they have, or regardless of how well they present themselves and how well they speak, they will not understand. But the wise shall understand. Not many mighty, not many noble, but those who have the wisdom of God. And from that time, that daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up. There shall be 1,290 days. About 3.5 years. Less than an election cycle, right? Blessed is he who waits and comes to 1,335 days. Brethren, we don't have to worry about the next 4 years. Or maybe the next 4 years after that, or the next 4 years after that. Because we're not waiting for the next election. What is it that we are waiting for, brethren? For the true government to be established upon this earth. Not a government of man, but a government of God, of Christ. In order to not be tossed about and made afraid of what's happening in the world around us, to not be led astray maybe by the words that we hear, we have to ask for wisdom. Just as Mr. Scheid was talking about, asking for strength from God, because we don't have it on our own. I can tell you, whenever I get together with one of the guys and we have a beer and we sit down and have a talk, my wife will come out and be like, so, solved all the world's problems? Because that's what we've been talking about. You know, when the ministry gets together, what do you think we talk about? Solve all the church's problems. You get together with somebody from work and solve all the work problems. Yeah, this would be a lot better if we didn't have that manager, or if we didn't have this, and we come up with our idea, right? Guess what? Nobody has the right idea. Nobody. We all fall short. We're all going to miss the mark because we're human, carnal, and we do not have the knowledge, the wisdom of God, who sees everything eternally, going all the way back eternally and all the way forward. I don't have that. I wish I could say, brethren, it's okay. I know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. Fact is I don't have a clue. And if I said I did, well, you probably shouldn't listen. There's a lot of things that you're going to hear. People are going to make a lot of predictions. You know, oh, this is going to happen. This will be great, or this will be really bad. But the reality is nobody truly knows. We have to look for wisdom in another place. The book of James It's interesting that the book of James is a book that you either love or hate. And I'm not talking about us, but amongst theologians, Luther called the book of James the apostle of straw. He didn't like it. What do you mean you have to do works? What? I mean, you can't just believe? But it is full of sound wisdom. James 1 and verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. What's the most famous example we can think of someone asking for wisdom? Wisdom that they didn't have. That they wouldn't know. Solomon. King Solomon, the wisest ruler, the wisest man in the world after that. Not because he started that way, but he asked for it. He said, I don't know how to go in or come out. How am I supposed to lead your people, this multitude of people? And he could have asked for anything, but he asked for wisdom. Again, he's asking for godly wisdom. And God gave that to him. He was so pleased with that he also gave him the wealth, the riches, the power. In verse 6, let him ask in faith, with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. If we ask and we know that God's going to give us that wisdom to make the right choices in our lives, he'll give it to us. Again, many of us looking back on our lives, maybe God gave us wisdom at the time. Boy, I know this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I know it's probably not wise. And I know that these other people have told me this would be a bad decision. Because I asked, you know, seek godly wisdom, right? Godly counsel. But I want it. And we do it anyway. We doubt. Or we decide, we choose to do something else. And then we're like a wave upon the sea. He said in verse 7, For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation, but the rich in humiliation, because as a flower of the field, he will pass away. You know, I've probably only been around a very few people that I would say are actually rich. You know, who've got, you know, they could buy and sell big companies at a whim, you know, not really faze them. You can spot the people who built their wealth. There's a wisdom there. And there's also a degree of humility. a lot of times they're kind of like, eh. They'll talk about buying and selling companies and like, oh, I forgot about that one. Because they also realize that it could go away in a moment. And that money doesn't make them who they are. To be rich is not a sin. As the church I grew up in, Worldwide Church of God, back in the day, it used to be like, well, in order to be righteous, you have to be poor. Does anybody enjoy being poor? Anyone? No? Yeah. Many of us at different times in our life have been on that poverty scale, right? We haven't done well. Maybe in our youth, maybe things happen. But to be rich is not a sin. We should be wise stewards, not easily taken advantage of. Wise as a serpent, yet harmless as a dove. We don't grow rich off other people. We don't take advantage of. We don't use that wolf-like cunning. But godly wisdom, godly knowledge. But the rich in his humiliation, because as a flower of the field, he will pass away. Brethren, in order to have that type of wisdom, not only do we have to ask for it, because I've asked for it many, many times, and the wisdom that God has given to me has typically been where you see the red flag. It's like, oh, don't do this. You know, we talk about red flags in relationships, especially in dating. They're like, well, didn't you know? Well, there were signs, but I really wanted to marry them. Business deals. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But true wisdom has to do with so much more than wealth, our own prosperity. It's the wisdom in who we marry. It is the wisdom with where we place ourselves. It's the wisdom in knowing when to open our mouths and when to keep them shut. I'm still working on that one. Job 28. Book of Job 28. You know, sometimes when we ask for God to give us something, a blessing, such as, well, Father, help me to be patient. I love that. I hear the noises. Oh, yeah. Made that mistake. You know, help me to be patient. Well, then he gives us trials that are going to last a while, that help us overcome. You know, the person that just gets really under your skin, suddenly you're with them all the time. That's the way God helps us experience and grow in things like patience. But he does the same in wisdom. If we look at Job 28, it begins by speaking of how man looks for riches. He says, surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess. He takes light into these holes in the ground, looking for what is profit and wealth. He searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death, basically into the grave. He breaks open a shaft away from people in places forgotten by feet. People haven't been there. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. There's danger and risk. And as for the earth, where from it comes bread, as underneath it is turned up as by fire, its stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, animals don't fly there, nor the falcon's eye has seen it. The proud lions haven't trodden it. Lions, animals aren't walking around down there. But yet man continues to tunnel. He continues to labor for that which will make him wealthy. He does all this work to change that which is natural around him, whether it's the rock or the rivers. In verse 12, he asks the important question. But where can wisdom be found? Where can wisdom be found? Well, brethren, that has to be mined for too. That has to be sought. And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. He's saying, you know, you can do all this other stuff and not have wisdom. If we skip down, he talks about how it's not in the mines, it's not in the earth, it's certainly not in gold. You can't buy it. There's no jewelry that can give you wisdom. In verse 20, from where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. You know, there are those, you know, their path that they're on is death. But they're like, oh yeah, we've heard of that. Yeah, I know people who believe that. I know people who won't do this. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. How many politicians did we hear say that? Now, some may kind of lean towards following Christ, towards Christianity, but did you hear anybody actually say this? No, I didn't. But wisdom has to be mined for. It has to be looked for. Brethren, where are we going to mine it? There's only one place. There's only one place where it can really be found. And it's not like there isn't wisdom and knowledge in the world. I occasionally like to listen to different podcasts. And sometimes I'm like, wow, that's really smart. That is really good. I really like that. I never thought of that before. But then if I continue to listen, I'll hear something. And maybe it's godly knowledge or wisdom that has been given to me. My spine will kind of stiffen. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound right. You know, there are many people who will study theology. They'll listen to other speakers. I do. Because they're not always wrong. In fact, they may say something I haven't thought of. But if I suddenly start taking knowledge and wisdom from them, knowing that there's quite a bit of misunderstanding, I may stop seeking it here. I may start putting my trust in a teacher that, well, I know he's not right about this other thing, but he's talking about this, and I just believe it because I've come to trust him, and it's easier to believe what somebody tells me than to knowledge mine it for myself. We can be led astray. And we always have to ask, where is our wisdom coming from? You ever had a group of people standing around, especially, I'll say this, the guys, and I kind of feel like it's like Job and his friends are trying to figure out what's going on and why all this is happening. And one at a time, you know, they'll say something, and the next guy goes up and he goes, I'll tell you what the problem is. Not a bad guy, right? I mean, Job was the most righteous man on earth at the time. He probably didn't have dishonest, unrighteous friends. But that's, I'll tell you what the problem is. I know. Remember how Job ends? Oh, you think you know? None of them were right. All of them had some knowledge. All of them had some wisdom, but it wasn't God's knowledge. It wasn't his wisdom. The knowledge of the world does what? Puffs up. Right? People who know a lot, they're often referred to as the authority on the subject. If you want to know about that, look to so-and-so. Well, if so-and-so doesn't match up with this, then we're looking in the wrong place. That's the problem with being a Republican or a Democrat. We're putting our faith in so-and-so. That's what we have to consider. Are we the most excited about the outcome or the most disappointed? And how much faith was I putting in a person? How many times have we loved a politician? I mean, I grew up in the 80s, Ronald Reagan. I love that guy. I mean, it's like him and John Wayne, right? Loved him. Well, 30 years after he's been president, there's some things that come out, and you find out, like, well, there were some policy issues that I didn't know about that. I don't know that I like that so much. JFK, civil rights leader, promoter, brave, courageous in many different ways. Philanderer. Not exactly godly. Where are we looking for the wisdom? If we're looking for the wisdom in the world, thinking it will lead us to God, then we're mining down the wrong shaft. We have to be mining the wisdom and the knowledge that leads us to God, and then we can recognize when there's somebody who's on the right track. But that's not the track that we're following. We are only following godliness. That which is good, the wisdom which comes from above. Turn back with me, if you would, back to James 3. James 3, and we'll begin in verse 1. James 3 and verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. You know, in politics, it's interesting because oftentimes, especially with our technology today, you know, they'll fact check someone, you know, kind of just like that. Now, again, sometimes your fact checkers have an agenda and they'll twist things around the way they want them to. But have you seen anything where somebody got up and said, I believe in this and I never said that? And the next thing you know, about 10 seconds later, a video clip pops up of them saying exactly that. But they put themselves up on the stage and they said, trust me, believe what I say. That's one of the scary things about being up here at the podium. Everyone who gets up here, we have to remember, it's not our knowledge, it's not our wisdom. It has to be God's. Or there will come a humbling. I'm terrified of that. You read Ezekiel. That's scary. That's why God says in James, let not many of you become teachers. Because the words which we say will come back upon us. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles? A word here, a word there. Taken maybe without thought, or taken out of context. And then see how that grows. See what can be done with that. Verse 7, and every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. That's how I felt about this election cycle. It's not if people just disagree on a topic, but then what's said about the person who disagrees. That's not wise. It happens in politics. We see it all the time. But it can happen with us too, right? When we have a disagreement, we don't like someone's take on a scripture or their thoughts on a subject. And it goes from talking about the subject and disagreeing to now we're speaking about that person and saying what a horrible person they are, or that they don't have God's spirit, or a heresy, or whatever. It just grows from that. Again, it's easy to point a finger at the politicians. I mean, it's like low-hanging fruit. It's so obvious, right? But we can do it too. Wisdom means that we put a guard over our lips, that we don't say the things that may come back to haunt us. I can tell you, as a father, as a parent, how many of us have said something that maybe a week later, a month later, or a year later, our kids repeat the exact same words back to us? That's a lovely, humbling reminder that we're supposed to take. Oh, I did say that, didn't I? It's a lot worse when it's in public. It's a lot worse when it's in public. With our mouth, with our lips, we bless our God and Father in verse 9. And with it, we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. They're just like us. Everyone's made in the image of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Now here is truly where he gets into the aspect of wisdom. Again, I think it was Poor Richard's Almanac. He said it's better to keep your mouth closed and to appear a fool or ignorant than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Right? That's wisdom. James 3 and verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. You will know them by their fruits. It's not just what we say, but what we do. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. That worldly wisdom, worldly knowledge, is about self. It's self-promoting. Look at me. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. It's all about self. It's of the devil. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. And this is, again, what we see so often in those ads. You know, and that's, I guess, part of our thing about politicians campaigning. They have to sell themselves. Vote for me. You know, a vote for me is a vote for justice. It's self-seeking, right? Do you think God's going to let us into his kingdom because we campaigned to get in? But God, look at me, how righteous I am. You know, and I'm not like that sinner over there. Oh, wait, there's a parable about that. See, it doesn't work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield. What's that mean? Willing, it's wisdom. It's that which is right, but willing to yield. You ever beaten somebody to death with the truth? You know, the knowledge of God, and we're just the sword of the Lord, and we're just stabbing them away with it. Has that ever worked for anyone? What about wisdom when you share with someone? You exhort them, you encourage them, because it's like, I don't want you to be hurt. I don't want you to go through this. But it's your choice. And I'll still be here when you're done. Maybe I'll help you pick up the pieces. And I'm not going to stab you with it again. That's godly. Full of mercy and good fruits. Without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Brethren, if we want to be in the kingdom of God, we have to be those peacemakers. Our country needs peacemakers right now. There's so much division. There's so much hurt. It's funny because, like I said, I have friends on Facebook who post different things. Both sides. And the hardest thing for me is, I kind of want to get in there and poke a few holes. Would that do any good at all? Would that make anyone who I disagree with actually want to come to church? No. Sometimes we have to know that wisdom is when to say something and when not to. Brethren, that is the wisdom that comes from above. Colossians 3 and verse 16 says this. Colossians 3 and verse 16, I'll just read this. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly with all wisdom. His words. If you have, the New Testament where his words are all written in red. Teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. Now, I don't know of anybody who's like in a musical and they sing to everybody. But can you imagine if what you said was music to someone's ears? Even if it was something that they didn't first agree with, but it was so comforting, it sounded like a song. Music to my ears. And verse 17, and whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. I don't do what I do as a Democrat or a Republican. What we're supposed to do is in the name of the Lord. Because most of them, brethren, don't have the knowledge of the Lord yet. Wasn't it wonderful being able to be at the Feast of Tabernacles? Everybody's there for the same reason. Everybody walking in is rejoicing. We're at the feast. And people are greeting each other, maybe who they haven't seen in a long time. But they're all there because we all agree in following God. We all agree in his word. Now, there may be some differences in that, but we're walking together. Brethren, that day is the day that will come for all of the world. It's not coming now. It's not going to come tomorrow. There won't suddenly be peace between Democrats and Republicans. But what will fix it, will not be the knowledge of the world or of man or a different economic policy or a social agenda. It will be the knowledge of God. Isaiah 11 and verse 9. I'll just read this one verse. Isaiah 11 and verse 9. And they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. No more wars, no more fights and contentions between different political ideologies. Why? For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Brethren, this is the knowledge of God. This is godly wisdom, which is not mine, which isn't yours, and it's certainly not the world's. It's God's. And it has to be sought. It has to be dug for. It has to be taken in. And then, brethren, we will know peace. We know that the wise, full of godly wisdom, will understand.